My name is Peter Chawla. I work as a program manager at a London-based NGO called the Bretton Woods Project. I think it's really important when we think about the financial system, we think very clearly about what the goals were and what they should be or what they need to be in the future. And in the past, I think it was very clear that the financial system was working on very short-term oriented goals rather than looking at some of the long-term oriented kind of thinking that really needs to be a core and central part of the financial system. It needs to focus on what are the needs of the real economy, what businesses need. That's its role, is to intermediate finance for business, to provide opportunities. But it also needs to focus on human welfare and as well as environmental sustainability. We can't have a financial system which is divorced from the people that are part of it or the people that form part of the economic system which it is supposed to serve. So it's really key that it matches those goals, that it really ties the real economy to the financial economy. I think it's very important that solutions we're looking for and meeting those goals has to happen at both the national and international level. You can't have a financial system which looks only to one particular economy because we live in a globalized financial system. Now, that doesn't mean that all national economies have to be completely open and liberal, but what it means is that we have to be very cognizant of the differences between real economies in different places, between people in different places, and between the environment in different places. So, you know, for example, you have Africa, which has a very different level of human development and may need very different kinds of both real services and financial services to try and improve the welfare of people there. As we think about what a new financial system would look like, I think the most important thing to consider is really the governance. It's about who controls the system and who sets the rules for it. And I think in the past, what we've seen is that with a short-term profit-oriented system, which didn't look at some of the serving the needs of the real economy or meeting human welfare needs, you ended up with a system with very little governance. Boards of directors didn't serve oversight roles that they were supposed to. Management didn't overlook of the companies that they were looking at. And even as you drill down within financial institutions, they weren't focusing on what they needed to focus on. Instead, we need a system which really puts at its heart the aims and then gets a governance framework over it that can meet those aims. That means particularly making sure that the system is directed and serving real people and the real economy, which means you need to have people somehow more closely involved, democratically elected governments, transparent systems, which can serve accountability as accountability mechanisms for getting the systems right and getting the financial institutions right. I think there's a very strong role for not only public sector, but different kinds of private actors to be involved in the way we govern finance. So it's not just that you want the government or the Bank of England or your central bank to be more clearly involved in regulating things, but you also need a panoply of stakeholders to be interested, to have power to influence decisions and outcomes. And that will range from, you know, the real sector. You might have, you know, chambers of commerce or business interests who would have a stake in how we govern financial industry. But that might also involve NGOs or, you know, other kinds of even religious groups or other kind of actors who might be concerned about the human impacts and the environmental impacts of what happens. It's very important that developing countries have a strong role in any kind of new system that's developed. And that's not only a role for how they can control financial flows or financial institutions to make them serve the benefit of their economies, their real economies, and their people. But it's also about them having a stake in what happens in the global system and including in the rich countries. We've seen from the last crisis that the impacts of the crisis, while were severe in US and Europe, actually had the deepest impacts and the most harmful impacts in developing countries, where people were buffeted by, you know, massive losses of income, the governments had massive losses of revenue, businesses failed, you had bankruptcies, you had hunger, and you had all, you know, related to the financial crisis, there were in 2008 food and fuel crises, which were also symptomatic of some of the problems in the way financial institutions and financial markets govern some of these key products. And those have severely affected the way people live their lives. And so you need developing countries to also have a role. And that means not only in the new institutions which are being formed and the new regulatory regimes that are being formed, but also improved representation of those people and their interests in the existing institutions. And you can think of the WTO, which has agreements around financial services trade, as well as the World Bank and the IMF, which did a lot of oversight over how economies operated and how they implemented financial sector regulation. In those institutions, you didn't have developing countries with a strong stake. And they clearly need a stronger stake in order to defend their interests, to defend the interests of their people and their economies, because they are the innocent bystanders who get negatively impacted when you have a lot of crises.
So in a politics of alternative finance, are we talking about fiddling with international organizations such as the IMF and the World Bank? Are we talking about a thorough overhaul, if not a replacement of those types of institutions?
As we looked at the international institutions, I think what we're seeing from the existing reform measures is a fiddling and a tweaking of the way things are run and the way things need to be arranged. And what we actually need is a complete overhaul. The crisis was really a product of the institutions such as the World Bank and the IMF and the national regulatory structures and arrangements in many countries in the Western world. And unless we completely overhaul these systems and restart rethinking from first principles about what we want a financial system to do, you're going to replicate the past mistakes in the new system and you're not going to solve some of the problems. For example, you have the rules around Basel capital adequacy, which are the rules that set how much capital banks have to hold against their loans and other activities. And those rules were designed by a small group of rich countries and their regulators in association with big banks. And instead, what you need to have is that whole structure being reformed so that you can have all of the regulation being done with the involvement and participation of developing countries and with representation of developing country people at the table. I think popular accounts of the financial crisis have gone down very well the terrain of failed regulation and failed regulatory institutions in the US and Europe. What they've really missed out is how those institutions were formed and who they represented. So you had developing countries not being involved, you had at the same time financial industry being very, very influential. So the whole development angle, both nationally, what it would take to develop a national economy to deal with some of the national inequalities, and also the international angle is completely missing. I think the other thing that has been touched upon, but very lightly in the beginning of people talking about the crisis, was some of the assumptions that underlied how people thought about financial markets and the economy. And since then, those assumptions haven't really been challenged or questioned. So we're talking about things like efficient market hypothesis, where they say that markets always clear at the most efficient price, and that's clearly not the case. We've seen wild swings in prices which don't reflect underlying fundamentals or changes in information. And we've also seen that, another one of these kind of assumptions which is always there is that internationally we have to have free flow of capital, and we have to have free floating exchange rates to match that. And that's always been an assumption that even when you talk about global imbalances and when you want to resolve issues between trade imbalances, if whether that's between Germany and Greece within Europe or whether that's between the US and China at the international scale, the assumption is always that we must stick with these principles which are based on a certain set of assumptions around how markets work, and that you have to have free-floating markets, free-floating currencies and free-floating capital. And that's not necessarily the case, and actually for 30 or 40 years after World War I, we didn't have those kind of systems and markets. And in fact, the global economy performed very well, and some people call it a golden age. So we need to rethink some of those assumptions which people have taken in as part of the foundation of how they want the system to be, and actually go back and check, do they meet our aims, what our goals for the financial system are. And if they don't meet those aims, then we need to rethink them and come up with a different system which can meet our aims around having a system which serves human welfare and the real economy.